Hi, welcome to the Berry Nation podcast, where we support the bariatric community with humor, humility, and honesty. I'm April.
And I'm Jason.
Today, we have the pleasure of welcoming a brand new face and voice to the podcast, Jane, who is a registered dietitian in Australia.
Yes, Aussie.
We're so excited to connect with you. We've had a lot of fun getting to know you and your area of expertise. And today's conversation is going to focus on something that I think every single bariatric patient thinks about, worries about, stresses over, and that is hunger. And specifically, getting to really understand and know what hunger is, and then honoring our hunger cues. Even when we might not feel like eating, right? After surgery, we go through this period where our hunger or our appetite is very suppressed, but we still have some protein goals that we need to reach. So really, if you hunger or your hunger returning or it's returned quicker than what you thought, and you're just a little bit concerned about this sensation about hunger, this episode is absolutely for you. So before we kind of jump into the conversation, Jane, will you please introduce yourself to any of our friends, followers, watchers that have never met you before?
Thanks, April. Very excited to be chatting with you both. So yes, I'm not American. I'm Aussie. I'm a registered dietitian, and I've been a registered dietitian for nearly 30 years. And in the last 6 years, I've specialised in the area of bariatrics. And I have worked in a bariatric clinic, but now I work solely online, supporting people all over the world before and after their weight loss surgery. And this topic is really close to my heart, and obviously that's, why we're chatting about it, because I am very passionate about, after weight loss surgery, it's not about just what you eat, it's how you eat. And I'm very passionate about working with my clients on eating habits. And this topic of listening to your body and body cues is a really wonderful and a key habit and a key area to, it's really great to dive into. So yeah, thank you.
It's going to be phenomenal. I know hunger is something I've had a love-hate relationship with. Jason, I'm sure you have too. And I think really, I used to think that my out of control hunger was a me issue. I've come to understand it is a disease issue. And even my friends that don't suffer from the disease of obesity still battle hunger, right? On a daily, weekly, it's just something that's always kind of there. So we're really excited to, to just kind of dive into this topic and better understand hunger.
Wonderful.
All right. Well, if you guys are ready, I say let's do it. Let's dive in. So defining what hunger is where we would like to start. So Jane, what is hunger and why does it happen? What drives it?
Hunger is our body's sensation to tell us to eat, because your body's key role is to survive. And so your cells are communicating, and the hormones in your body are the big ones and people have often heard of is leptin and ghrelin. The hormones talk and help your body, you or your sensations. You need to eat because survival is your key role. And people think, well, if I'm overweight and if I am suffering from obesity, why will I still be hungry? Your body's role, and your body actually wants to protect its weight, no matter where your weight is. So it's really a survival mechanism. And that's also where bariatric surgery works. There is that global push to call it not just bariatric, but bariatric metabolic surgery, because the surgery also works to help manage that uncontrolled excessive hunger, especially in the early to medium term after weight loss surgery. So hunger is not bad. Hunger is your body talking to you, and I'm going to be probably saying that quite a bit, because I talk to my clients all the time about your body's talking to you. Let's listen to it. And hunger. And also, over that first year after your weight loss surgery, your body and your appetite will increase, and we expect it to increase. And I don't want anyone to feel scared of it. It's about learning how to manage it, if that makes sense.
I don't know
Definitely.
about, yeah, and I was going to say, Jason, I don't know about you, but before surgery, my hunger was out of control, insatiable. I could eat, and then just a few minutes later, I was hungry again. I felt like I was always hungry or starving. And I think it took me a while to commit to having bariatric surgery because I just couldn't believe that surgery would help quiet, calm, or make that hunger go away. It absolutely did, right? For the first almost the first year of my. What was your experience, Jason?
Hey friends, it's April, and I want to welcome Dive Bar Nutrition to the Berry Nation family. They are official sponsor of the Berry Nation podcast, and we are thrilled to have Professor Phil and his team on board. Jason, Natalie, and I have been enjoying Dive Bars for years because they taste amazing, they have great macros, and they are really built to help us succeed. Dive Bar Nutrition is just launching a new bariatric friendly called Dive Bar Bites. They're the mini versions of their best-selling bars and they're caffeine-free. You can buy a Dive Bar Madness kit and discover what flavor is your favorite. Head to Dive Bar Nutrition right now, get that Dive Bar Madness kit, and join us to crown your favorite Dive Bar flavor at the end of March. And don't forget to use code BERRYNATION when you check out to get 22% off your order.
I was a volume eater, so I would just be so hungry that I knew that I had to have just the max amount of food that I could possibly get into me before I would be like my fullness cue was basically when I couldn't move anymore for fear of being sick because I just crammed myself full of so much food. And I ate like that all the time. So I would go either not eating and thinking about eating until it was time to eat, and then I would pack it all in. But that's usually how it went for me. I would be hungry until I did that. And then once I was so full I could barely move, then it was, oh, just let me get through this without getting sick. But when I get done with this, what are we going to eat after that? Like what comes next? So I was legitimately always either consuming or thinking about food or watching videos about cooking food or all the like I immersed myself in it because it's very hard for somebody in my position, because I absolutely love to cook. Even if I don't eat anything I cook, I because a lot of times when I prepare like barbecue and stuff like that, it takes days to do it. So by the time it's done, I've been so involved in all that, I don't even eat it usually for the most part, but just being able to feed other people. So I love being able to do all those things, and I'm a foodie by heart, and I love to try new recipes and outlandish recipes and things like that. Like that's my jam. So it's hard for me to do those things and not equate it to the fact that I know in my brain, like my brain is not wired to do that in a healthy way. It really always seems like it's an obsession about what the food is. Even if I can't eat it, I still obsess over the fact that I want to be able to, even if I can't. So it's, that's kind of been the hard thing on the heels of having surgery for me both times, actually, is that I still watch, you know, those types of things to gain ideas for new recipes. But in my head, I liken it back to when I could eat, like how excited I would get when I was thinking of something or I would cook something new so that I could eat it. So that's, it's been kind of strange for me to kind of navigate that.
I think as you were sharing, we're going to go, I suppose, into other parts of hunger, but I thought it'd be really good to bring up the topic of different types of hunger. And I'm a mindful, I'm trained and educated in mindful eating, and I bring that mindful eating education into the work with my clients. And, you know, I talk about physical hunger, and then I talk about emotional hunger. And we want to, when I work with clients, we really pull it apart, so to speak. It's kind of like can be wrapped up like a ball of wool, and we fluff it out and we pull it apart. And first we make sure we're physically satisfied. Our cells have got enough protein going in. And, you know, the way I work and all the, you know, using evidence-based practices to ensure people are satisfied physically. And then it's a lot easier to identify, I want to eat. I really want to eat. I feel some hunger, but actually it's not physical hunger. There's emotional. I am sad, happy, glad, or whatever it is. And yeah, we you know, food is, it gives us emotions. It gives us feelings. We have, you know, we have memories, there's great memories associated with food, a whole lot of reasons we want to eat that aren't physical. And it's very normal to eat for emotional reasons. It's really about when does it lead to overeating. And so the first part of what I do with my clients is we first ensure we're physically satisfied from a hunger perspective, and then we look at when the emotional, that emotional eating, non-hungry eating, and look at strategies to manage that. But sometimes they're so wrapped up, it can be really hard to distinguish which is which. So just wanted to bring that up as a topic, and I think most people, do relate to it. I just, what are your thoughts? Is that something you're nodding your heads?
Oh yeah, no, we definitely, not only is it something that we are very familiar with in the way of we've experienced it and are still experiencing it, but we also, yeah, we have one of the therapists in Berry Nation actually teaches classes specifically on emotional eating, head hunger, the differences between the two, and kind of how they relate. So it is something that a lot of our community doesn't think about until after surgery, because they, nobody wants to admit that they have those things or those emotional triggers that keep, that have them eating, or that they're food addicts, or however you want to, nobody wants to really put that label, any of the labels on it, until they start doing, like you said, once they start unwrapping those layers and figure out, oh, okay, now I see why I was doing X, Y, and Z that led me to eat the way that I was eating. So no, you're 100% on topic with that.
Hey, this is April, one of your hosts. If the Berry Nation podcast has made a positive impact on your life, become a supporter. For $5 a month, you can help us produce this podcast. Your support would mean the world to us. Visit us online at berrynationpodcast.com to learn more.
Yeah, I think what makes it bariatric patients, right? When we are learning to listen and honor our hunger cues, is that for so many years in our life, hunger was this constant present thing, right? And we could never get rid of it, or it was just always there, was always eating at us. And even if we would eat something and we maybe would realize it's not actual physical hunger, it's emotional hunger, we didn't have any other tools to deal with it. So, we go into surgery not trusting our hunger cues to begin with. And then after surgery, sometimes hunger disappears. It goes away and we're ecstatic, right? And it's like, oh my gosh, I finally have this break from this thing that has just been gnawing at me, for decades. But then when it comes back, when hunger returns, we can get panic again, because it's like, oh my God, now it's back. I have to deal with this again, right? You just get so used to kind of it not being there, and you're so excited about it. So when it returns, at least for me, it was like, oh great. Okay. So now my hunger is back. And I didn't know how to differentiate physical hunger from emotional hunger. And then when I learned to differentiate the two, it was like, okay, so now I have some tools for identifying what's physical hunger versus emotional hunger. But that hunger is all time, or more than what I would like. And it just kind of wears you down. It just is something that is always there. And it's just really draining to deal with all the time. And as a patient, you just get tired of it. You just get, you're just over it. And then returning to emotional eating is kind of like the only thing that you know how to do, because you just haven't had enough time to practice those other skills.
Yeah.
So Jane, what are some tools or what are some things that you do with your clients to help them identify physical hunger versus emotional hunger?
Well, first, we always are working on that physical hunger. And there are so many things you can do in your diet, April, to help increase satiety, to help keep people satisfied. I am very passionate about regular meals, and that's obviously super important. Protein, and there's no one. I always get asked, or it's such a common question, how much protein should I be having? I'm 2 years out from surgery. Well, guess what? Everyone's got different protein goals, and some people need even more to feel satisfied. And we leverage certain things in the diet, such as protein, to increase your level of satiety. So it's even, some people say, well, I was told to have 80 grams of protein, but I'm still hungry. Well, we need to eat more. We don't eat more, a huge amount of more volume and a huge amount more calories. We increase protein. There's other things that increase satiety, fiber and good fats. And so Sometimes it's just about adjusting some things. So first thing is really about getting the foundations right. There's also really great research to show that a good amount of protein, of your protein intake in the early part of the day, results in less hunger and cravings later in the day. They've done studies of like the typical intake, you know, in non-bariatric people, and protein intake is low at breakfast, moderate at lunch, bigger more at dinner, you know. And what we want to do is we want to at least even it out, and if we can, put a little bit more in that early part of the day. And we want to enter your hot spots, I call it, which is your vulnerable times. You know, I talk to my clients, I don't want you walking through the door at the end of the day hungry, heading straight. I want you to walk through the door satisfied. You can comfortably get to dinner. And then another hot spot is very common after dinner. So first we ensure that there's enough and we, you know, as much as we can get people satisfied. And then there's the habits and then there's the practice and different strategies. And one of them can be very much developing that practice of asking yourself, am I, okay, I want to eat. Am I physically hungry? No. If I'm not, we move into asking ourselves, and this is a very quick kind of overview of the strategy, but asking ourselves to not act on that desired eat for a certain amount of time. You've probably heard it's quite a common strategy, but it works because hunger and cravings can get mixed up. So if we're talking cravings, we're talking that emotional, that comes on quickly and it will pass quickly. Hunger comes on slowly. You haven't eaten for some time, it won't go away. Cravings or emotional eating come on quickly. We don't act on them, they can pass. So we can say to ourselves, I'm going to ask myself not to act on this desire for 15 minutes. I'm going to put the timer on my oven because you know oven timers, you can hear them anywhere in the house when they go off, they're that loud. And in that time, I can do some work on myself. I can ask myself, why am I hungry? What part of my body feels hungry? Is it my eyes, my brain, my mouth? You know, some people want love looking at pictures of foods. What emotions am I trying to meet? What can I do in this 15 minutes to look after my emotions? Sometimes it's going out to the backyard and just doing something in nature. Might be calling a friend, might be reading a trashy magazine. Or, you know, my example is looking a little bit of Kardashians, you know. So, you know, just feeding, you know, I work with a lot of busy mums. Feeding that desire just for a bit of a break. So that's just one strategy. So really, it's practicing that muscle of stopping and saying, am I physically hungry? Body scan, being honest and compassionate. Okay, I'm not actually physically hungry. I'm emotionally hungry. What am I hungry for? And so we, you know, that's a practice. That is a practice and it's a muscle that you practice. You know, are you always going to be perfect? No. Some days you're going to say, not today. You know, the car broke down. You lost the cat. The child's sick. You know, it's just you have. We all have those days. I don't have a cat though, but I've got the other two. And you just, you know, you just go. You give yourself compassion. You practice. It's a practice. So it is, and it can help. And that's what I do. You know, and I think some people think dietitians just talk about, well, eat this and don't eat this and da da da. But actually, it's very much around identifying. You know, all of this emotional eating and working through it and how you eat, but also setting yourself up to get into those hot spots, less likely to have a craving, less likely to be vulnerable. And, you know, it's also for me around not just stopping behaviors, but actually starting other behaviors that just push that one out. It pushes that out of the picture. It's more positive to start habits than just, I've got to stop this, I've got to stop this. So did that kind of answer that? That's just briefly, you know, like there's a lot of different strategies I use around emotional eating. Really depends on people's what's going on for them. You know, how do they work as a person? What's going to suit them? And I always say to people, let's practice this, see how it works. If not, let's practice another strategy and see what's right for them.
Yeah, it's one of the things we talk about, you know, when we say the thing about bariatric surgery is you can have the bariatric surgery, but life doesn't stop just because you had surgery. Life doesn't care that you're only 3 months post-op and you get hit with something crazy that came out of left field. You're going to have to navigate those things and still keep yourself in check to realize that now you don't have the food to help soothe that emotion anymore, and you're in the throes of it, and you've got to have ways. The biggest thing first off is to recognize what it is you're feeling and to kind of, catch that feeling, and check it and figure out exactly what it is, and kind of move through it in that way. Because before we would, our therapist of choice was food. It was drive-throughs. It was whatever we could get our hands on. Because, those people are always super nice when they're handing you the bag out the window. And, they're always smiling when you hand them your money, and they're always there for you. So it's one of those things like that. That's our therapy in a way. And when you don't have that anymore, it's being able to actually recognize what it is and how to process it is kind of one of the biggest things. So it's good that you had mentioned that, because a lot of people don't know. Like, they just assume post-op everything's going to be great, and they don't. We're never really told pre-op that this doesn't work on our head at all. Like, we kind of get the overall gist that they're not doing anything to our mind, but we kind of hope that all that stuff will just go away when we have the surgery post-op. And it's usually not until we get hit with some crazy, curveball that we're like, oh wait, I still gotta process all this at the same time. Oh no.
Definitely. And some of the things that, the emotions that can come up for people are really heavy, really significant. And I love, like you just, mention the word therapist. And I love when people say that seeing someone, they're talking to someone, or they're going to reach out to someone, because the emotional journey, after weight loss surgery can be much more challenging than the physical one. So I certainly don't cross over in my work into being a therapist. It's not what I do, but I really encourage people to do that, especially if stuff comes up for them that they can't manage themselves. And it's, I love it, April, when you do that. You do that. It's so cute. I saw you the other day doing that. I was like, ah, you did that on my podcast. Very cute.
And that's why we always encourage people, like, if you enjoy the podcast, the audio version, definitely listen to the YouTube version, because we are all of our guests and we're all so animated. It just,
Yes, I'm waving my hands around all
yes, right.
the
It's like, oh my God.
time.
Well, and what I very much appreciate, is if we can anticipate these hot spots when it comes to our hunger, we can plan out our day a little bit better. And just being around people who get the struggle is one of the steps that we can take to help us start identifying, okay, am I experiencing physical hunger or I'm experiencing emotional hunger? In the Berry Nation membership community, Laura Grabo is one of our amazing bariatric therapists, and she leads emotional eating support groups. And that is the place where I really learned so many of the tools that I employ every single day in my life as a patient, just being with other patients and learning from experts like Laura, or like yourself, is how we figured this out. Because this stuff didn't come in my bariatric binder. This was not included when I left my surgical center. It said something in there about, like, oh, you're gonna need to, like, honor your hunger cues. And it probably said something about, like, oh, you need to understand what emotional eating is, or don't emotionally eat. What the heck does that?
Oh, done.
Okay. Great, right?
Look, I'm glad you mentioned both of those, because mine didn't say anything
No,
about that. It said eat 1200 calories, drink 60 ounces of water, and you'll be fine for the rest of your life. The end.
And I think that's, and I talk about this quite a bit. Bariatric centers are very much built by bariatric surgeons. They are surgery centers, and their role is to do surgery and to get you kind of healing, get you through the state, and some of them do provide longer term, but a lot are very focused on that very short term, and then they release you to the world to fly off by yourself. Go to your primary care provider, be looked after. And, I think things are changing over time about that mindset, that is just, the step one of It's just that intervention is a tiny portion of the journey. And that's why I do what I do, and that's why you guys, do what you do. So, no, it's good to talk about it, because some people feel, I am struggling and I'm doing everything that's in my piece of paper. Something's wrong with me. Other people seem to be doing okay. No one else has said anything. And that's really, I think, oh my goodness, so that's why, I mean, I've done reels on that, and I've talked quite a bit about it. Let's normalize that you need more than a piece of paper or a booklet or a binder, no matter how beautiful it looks.
Preach, preach.
Yeah.
Well, and that's actually it's a good segue into the next question that we wanted to ask you, and that which is kind of I think what we've been talking about, but why is it so hard for people to honor their hunger cues? Or why is it so hard for people to stop eating?
Oh, so like, this is such a big question. I talk, and I'll, people listening to this can start reflecting as I go through this on what it might be for them. My example that I give people is, when little babies start eating and you give them like the mashed up little food, they've got the little gums happening, and you give them the little bit of food, they will eat until they're happy. We're born to listen to our bodies, to and listen, push the spoon away, I'm done, and listen to our bodies. Over life, we forget, or we're not, we kind of, it pushes us to not listen to our hunger and fullness cues. Before surgery, you can't miss your hunger. It's yelling at you. After surgery, it can be whispering to you. Your body can be whispering to you. That's one example. But also, I also say, it can be talking to you in a different language. So it's relearning. And what I mean by that is, some people, I say, where do you feel it in your body when you're satisfied? And I use the word satisfied all the time, because I teach my clients to stop eating when they're satisfied, not full. Satisfied. Where is it? Where do you feel it in your body? Is it up here in your, near your shoulder? Is it a runny nose? Do you get hiccups? Where do you feel it? And over, that first, say, 18 months, it's going to change. You get more distinct hunger and fullness cues, or hunger and satiety cues. But it's a different, it's speaking in a different language, and it changes. But I'm going to, did you want to say something, April, or did you want me to go keep going?
I think you just blew my mind, because I just made a connection. When
Okay.
you said you teach people, to about being satisfied, and in my brain I was thinking, I'm never satisfied. Like, I never reach this what I think is satisfaction, because I think satisfaction is something emotional. But when you just said I teach them to tap into their satisfaction, you talked about physical cues that you're satisfied. I never in my life connected satisfaction with physical cues. I always
Okay.
equated satisfaction with something emotional.
Emotional. Well, a practice you can do is, when you're eating, and small bites, chew well, eat slowly, is, it's about listening and say, where do I, is this enough? Where do I feel it in my body? And so this is part of mindful eating and sitting quietly and, listening. Is it here? Is it, where is it in the body that you feel it? So the practice of, body scanning, and I always make the joke, you don't need to have crystals and sit on a bean bag to do this. This is not woo-woo, and it's not a big time commitment. It is about just going, okay, sitting for a minute, where do I feel it? Yeah. And that is the challenge, April, is because you can feel physically satisfied, but the mouth can still feel some hunger. The eyes can still feel some hunger, and we want to explore that and look at, how can we meet that hunger in other ways other than food? And there will be other ways. There's an underlying unsatisfied aspect, an emotional aspect. So it is those parts. But I just want to go back and talk to, for people listening to reflect on, when did it start in your life? Do you reflect that, when you stop listening to your body on when to stop eating? And often it happens in childhood. Eat what's on your plate. Someone else's, in another country, is hungry.
Yeah, I
Doesn't
just
really
started
make a difference.
saying, Members of the Clean Play Club. That's because that a lot of we get a lot of people that's they talk about that. Yeah, they were members of the Clean Play Club.
Yes. And look, we know, it's about being compassionate with your parents because, we can always blame our parents. That's fun, isn't it? It's my parents' fault. But what it is, they can come from a childhood of food scarcity. People can have, even in today's world, children can still be in households with food scarcity or be brought up with food scarcity. So it's like you eat or you don't get it. We don't listen to our body. But also with technology today, we're so used to eating in front of computers, eating quickly with busy jobs, kids running around, just get food in. We've lost that practice of sitting quietly, eating slowly, and listening to how our body feels. And so that's, why is it so hard to honour? There's that part of it. There's eating habits that I, work a lot with my clients about. There's that unmet emotional emotional hunger, and it can be a combination of everything or some things for different people.
Hey, this is April. Jason, Nat, and I love making this podcast for you each and every week, but we need your help to keep it going. Become a Berry Nation podcast supporter for $5 a month and help us produce this show. Visit us online at berrynationpodcast.com to join us.
What really is just blowing my mind is that connection between being full or being satisfied, and it's actually a physical thing. Because growing up, there's not a time in my life where hunger was not constant and never satisfied. And I've come to learn that is just a part of my disease, right? Some people suffer from the disease of obesity, have this constant hunger that just cannot be satisfied. Now that I've had surgery and I'm on medication, I am doing the work to learn what are the physical cues that my body is sending me and how do I honor them. And I know many patients before surgery, or excuse me, many patients right after surgery, or patients who are on an anti-obesity medicine, the struggle now becomes, how do I honor my hunger even when it's not present? How do I still hit my goals along my bariatric journey, even when this isn't present? And I know, Jason, this is something that you're probably wondering too, because you're fresh out of surgery. So Jane, what do you recommend to people who want to honor their hunger, but it's not physically there for them anymore?
Yeah. And it's such a balance and an evolving state, because yes, you're in that space for a certain amount of time and then it weans off. And as I said before, or your hunger increases, over time, your appetite, your hunger and fullness cues. So that's why, when I'm working with someone in the really early days and, if they've got bariatric guidelines, I always, will honour those. But around week three, when puree food's there and we're starting to really get an eating schedule, I don't give amounts of food to eat. I teach a protein bite ratio. So I will teach 3 meals a day, 3 bites of protein for every 1 bite of other whole grain, fruit or veg. So we really, and we small bites, chew well, eat slowly, stop when you're satisfied. And then we really do use, and we aim for about half the protein needs to be in liquid form in those early days, because it's so much easier to drink your protein than eat it. When we don't drink enough in those early days and we put too much pressure on eating, people can eat past their comfort level, try and force it down because they want to get to their protein goals. They know it's really important. They get uncomfortable. They get a whole lot of feedback from their body that it's not good and, it comes up. So we take pressure off the eating by having a good portion of our protein via. This is just general, because some people can eat a little bit more comfortably than others. But we need to, in the early days, drink some of our protein. And my example is a little shake, a little high protein shake. You can get the protein of 2 eggs in that. And that little shake can be nice, icy cold, sip, 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 over 20, 30 minutes, done. You won't get through 2 scrambled eggs for a long time, before you'll get that in much more comfortably. Later on, you'll be able to get more protein So we do that, and over time, as you can eat more, we drink less of our protein. But it's starting to practice from really the early days of listening to those hunger and fullness or hunger and satiety cues, practicing the habits and learning and listening to those cues, but also knowing that they're going to change, over time. Does that answer your
Yes.
question?
Yeah. Well, and I very much appreciate you just saying in the early stages of our bariatric journey, relying on liquid protein or prepackaged protein sources is going to be the way. Because, hunger is not going to be something that many people experience. But based on all the education that we've done, thanks to all the experts in the podcast and in the Bari Nation membership community, we know just how powerful and needed protein is. So we know we need to get it in. Jason, what have you been doing these past couple weeks to hit your protein goals after surgery? Because I don't think you're not hungry, right? Or what's your hunger been like after surgery?
I wasn't hungry the first probably 4 or 5 days. I started today hunger came back into play a little bit. I was able to have eggs for the first time today, so I was super excited about that because I miss eggs because the eggs are my jam. Two eggs in the morning. But so the way I set my day up is in the first thing in the morning, I can't really eat. I'm not feeling that. So I will put a 30-ounce protein or 30 gram of protein shake down first thing in the morning. And then I get about, 3 hours, 3.5 hours into my day, then I'll eat eggs and some grains to kind of keep that up. But right now I'm doing 3 protein shakes a day with meals in between, because my protein goal right now is 130 grams a day. So I'm substituting, a lot of that with the liquid shakes, because I don't think I can eat that much right now. I'm getting to a point where, that egg didn't bother me today. I'm mixing protein powder in with soups and stuff that I'm eating too. So I'm making sure I still get at least my 25 grams of protein in with that kind of stuff. And tonight we had I had refried beans, which were amazing because I just needed some flavor in my mouth that wasn't a protein shake. So I've been doing kind of mix and matching things to make it work. So it's working out really well for now, but I really feel like slowly reintroducing some foods back in are going to be really, really good and easy for me. Luckily, I haven't had any problem with that so far. So that's kind of how I'm navigating it at this point. And then there are some foods that I've realized after my first go around that I will not add back in. I can't do it. So there will be some abstinence practiced for me, because I know better, because I know what's going to happen if I don't. I've seen that movie. I've seen the ending, and we're choosing to write an alternate ending this time. So sorry.
Fantastic.
They're
Great.
not.
Yeah, 130, and you're a big guy, you're a tall guy. You can imagine, it's just you can't eat all the protein in the early days. And I think it's not forever, because some people are listening to this going, they don't love high protein shake. It is not forever. And you're going to look back and it's going to be a small part of, small part of your journey. But it's a long game. And I do use the analogy, it's a marathon, not a sprint, but I don't know if everyone appreciates that one.
I know, we love
Especially,
that one. We love that.
yeah. When I talk to some clients and I say, what do you, how do you like to move your body? And sometimes they'd like, no, we have a laugh. And so I had a friend that even at school, she would hide when there was gym class on, like that she's just not, and that's, yeah. But yeah, so it's so the analogy of it's a marathon, not a sprint, probably doesn't work, but it's a long game, and it's going to be kind of 2 years before you really everything's solid, yeah, rocking along. But I think I interrupted you, April, so
No,
okay.
you didn't. It is refreshing, and I need to hear this as a patient, and I know we all do, right? We're very much like a let's eat our protein, let's eat whole foods, but we are also bariatric patients, and we will always be bariatric patients. And our relationship with food and hunger is going to ebb and flow throughout our lives. And it's important that we all understand that no matter where we are in our journey, we do need to keep our nutritional needs front and center. And sometimes that means relying on and just incorporating shakes and bars and some of those prepackaged things so that we can meet our goals, right? Setting timers to remind us to eat, giving ourselves the space and grace of some of our other needs every now and then is okay. It's allowed. And based on where we're at in our journey is needed and necessary. It's why we have the phrase that we do. We have to give ourselves space and grace along this journey. And sometimes we need space from some of our nutritional long-term goals, like only eating whole foods all the time, and the grace to know that we just need to do certain things at a certain time in our journey. And I think you beautifully articulated that, Jane.
Thanks, April.
Yep. And just a shout out to our community manager, Ginny. She's the one that submitted this question. Thank you so much for posting that. We're actually going to continue the conversation with Jane. We have four other questions that came in from our community, and we're very excited to ask them. If you are a member of the Berry Nation support community, or if you support the Berry Nation podcast on Patreon for $5 a month, you are going to get this bonus. Questions that we're going to talk about are, how do we know our bodies are asking for more nutrition when we up our movement? Can hunger cues change based on surgery type? What can we do when we want to ignore our hunger cues because we're scared to eat and gain weight? And how do I hit my goals when I get so full so fast? So all of those questions we are going to ask. And like I said, if you're a member of the support community or if you support this podcast, you are going to get those. And if you would like to get the answers to those, we invite you to join us in the membership community or become a supporter of this podcast. And you can actually submit questions that we'll answer live. So just head to Berry Nation to become a podcast supporter, or go to berrynation.n.co to become a member. Jane, this conversation has been profound. Definitely some big aha moments for me. And I think Jason had the same. Is there one thing that you really hope people leave this conversation knowing or understanding about hunger or honoring our hunger cues? Is there a big takeaway?
I think the big takeaway is to take some time to listen to your body when you eat. And that can, it can be very helpful to do it when you're sitting quietly, eating slowly, and just listening to your body, because it's talking to you. And we listen to our phones, we watch TV, we listen to everyone around us, and we ignore our body. So yeah, practice listening to your body.
That's a pretty good good takeaway. And I know we're going to continue talking about that in this bonus episode that we're about to head to. Jane, where can people follow you or connect with you if they want to work with you or learn more about you?
Beautiful. Yes, I'm the bariatric nutrition coach, and I am bariatric nutrition coach everywhere. Instagram, I have a podcast, The Bariatric Nutrition Coach. I have a Facebook community, which is lovely, and I have a Facebook, you know, bariatric nutrition coach on Facebook. So I'd love people to message me or say hi.
And we will make sure that in the show notes this episode. So if you would like to connect with Jane, just head to the show notes and click all of the links there. Jane, thank you so much for joining us tonight on the podcast. This has just been a phenomenal conversation.
You're so welcome. I've loved it. And I love connecting with you, with Berry Nation. And I really appreciate the opportunity.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jane. Jason, my friend, you want to take us out?
Yes, ma'am. Jane, it has been a pleasure. Thank you so much. To the community at large, we thank you guys so much for all the likes, the shares, the subscribes, telling people that we exist to help spread the word, because help is needed. And if we can provide it, we'd be more than happy to do that. So thank you guys for continuing to do that. Please continue to like, share, and leave us ratings on your favorite podcast players, as well as YouTube, because those only help drive the SEO up so people can find us better. So we appreciate you guys for doing that as well. And just remember, at the end of the day, you've got this, we've got you, and we'll see you next time.
Awesome. Bye, friends. Thanks, Jane.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.